You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Hey everyone, Chris Lopez here, and welcome to our July Denver Roundup. This is where I spend about an hour. We go over some quick market stats and we go over a couple of deals every month. So it's our virtual grab a cup of coffee, join us and talk real estate. This is the best way for people to stay up to date as to what's going on the market because a lot of this stuff has happened within the last 30 days. So again, my name is Chris Lopez. I'm a real estate agent here in Denver at Your Castle Real Estate, and I help investors buy rental properties, either as traditional 20-25% down investments or through house hacks and nomads, all of it on building long-term rental properties. And my co-host today is Joe Massey, who is a senior lender at Castle & Cook Mortgage. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. Always great to see you, Chris. Really enjoy these roundups. It's always fun to review the market, review what's happening. Sometimes it's the same old story. Other times we have some exciting things to talk about that have changed in the last 30 days. So I'm excited to go over everything with everyone today and really appreciate being here.
Of course. And before we jump into the stats, I want to give everyone a quick heads up that the Denver Investor Success Summit, it's scheduled. The registration page is live. It's scheduled for October 12th, which is a Saturday. It starts at 8 or 9 a.m. in the morning, goes all the way to 5 p.m. with a happy hour afterwards. If you don't know about this, this is the 14th one that Your Castle and Pine Financial Group have put on. For the first number of years, it was twice a year. And a couple of years ago, they moved to once a year. So this is the 14th one they've done. And it's the best local event I've been to as far as a real estate investing event here in Denver for a couple of reasons. One, it's inexpensive. It's $19 to register. Number two, it's about education and networking. And number three, it's not a sales pitch fest, which you guys have probably heard me in the past go on my rants. I'm not a big fan of these sales pitches and all the stuff. I like networking. I like education because Joe's and I motto is like, great, we'll provide great education. And that's going to help us either bring deals to us or bring clients. And we'll all make money by doing deals versus selling a bunch of expensive items. And the guys that put this on, they have the exact same philosophy. And Joe, I know you've been part of that event, either speaking or emceeing or always involved in that event. Give your two cents on there.
I have been to all 14 of these, and I'll tell you something.
You're old, huh?
I am old, Chris. You know that. I learned something at every single one of these, and I presented at, I don't know, 5 or 6 or 7 of these. I was the MC last year. Just a super fun event. You know, we'll have anywhere from 250 to 400 real estate investors in the room. Lots of good information. There will be two conference rooms going, so you can, if you come with a partner, one of you go to conference room A for that speaker, one of you go to conference room B for that speaker, then swap. Lots of great information, tons of stuff to learn, and it's all actionable. That's the thing that I love about the Investor Success Summit is it's not just, hey, you know, I did this deal back in 1982. It is just like the roundup. These are deals that just occurred. This is how we did it. This is a deal we're working on right now. This is how it works. And having those real-time investors, real-time presenters, real-time vendors there, it's going to help you set up your network, set up what you're doing, and set yourself up for success. Tons of great networking, tons of things to learn. I just highly encourage it. It's just a great way to kind of wrap up the year and review kind of what everyone's been doing and what are the plans for next year. You know, I know it's not the end of the year, but October, we're kind of getting into the winter, which really winter is the high season for investors. You should be looking at properties from October 15th till about March 15th.
That was a great time to buy.
Yeah.
So go to denveriss.com to register. Again, www.denveriss.com. ISS stands for Investor Success Summit. And I know this podcast is dropping towards the end of August. The hosts have until August 31st a 2-for-1 deal. So buy one, get one free. So it'll save you $19, which, hey, a dollar saved is better than a dollar earned. So it'll save you $20 there. So go ahead, register there. No special code needed. Just register before the end of the month on August 31st. And then you can bring your partner, your spouse, your business partner. If you're an agent, bring your client, all sorts of stuff there. So get a freebie ticket and put it to good use. And I'll actually be speaking at this one. I've got a brand new presentation. I'll be presenting there that no one's ever seen before using some data and models and charts that's also brand new as well. So if you guys like the stuff Joe and I talk about, I'll have some fun stuff to present there for my 50 or 60 minutes on stage.
That's great. I didn't know you were going to be speaking. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, I was starting to. I'm getting it finalized now, so I'm getting really excited about it because I'm using that new real estate financial planning software.
Yeah.
So we're going to do some fun stuff.
That's great.
All right, so jumping into the data for the month of, what was this, the month of July. So if you guys have been listening to the last, you know, roundup webinars or roundup podcasts we've been doing, we've been talking about how inventory has been building. Well, then snapshot is kind of the same old news. It's been the last 6 to 8 months. Inventory is building some, so really no new news there. To give you some stats for July, the total number of active inventory for July was about 9,300 properties. Last July was about 7,600 properties. So that's about a 22% growth year over year. Now, again, keep in mind, we like to compare stats on a seasonal basis. So from this July to past July, because we have seasonality here in Denver, selling in the springtime is very different than selling between Thanksgiving and Christmas. So we like to take in the seasonality that Denver has as we look at the stats to get a better idea on the data. So it's about a 22% increase, which is more than we had last year. But if you look at percentage-wise, what we've had for a lot of these past months, sometimes we were in the 30, even high 40% range from like building year over year. So this is not a huge inventory build like it's been the last couple of months, especially in the springtime and wintertime. We saw some big jumps there. So actives are still up. And also under contracts are up still. So we had about just under 6,000 properties under contract for this July, compared to about 5,400 last July, so about 500 and change more. So we're about 9% higher. And I think the last 2-3 months, we've seen a pretty significant uptick in under contracts, right?
We have. Yeah. We have. And something I want to touch on before you get to the end of the slide, we're seeing an increase in under contracts, and we're continuing to see that, but it's not necessarily directly relating to the number of properties sold. And I know this is further down the slide, but I want to touch on it. We saw in July of 19, 5,400 properties sold. A year ago, July of 18, 5,500 properties sold. So it's a 2.5% decrease, about 150 units less that were sold. Yet under contract, there was 5,400 under contract last year, 5,900 under contract this year. So I know the answer, but Chris, why in the world would we have so many more properties under contract increased by 9%, but closings decreased by 2.5%?
Ooh, I'm glad you brought that up because I read a really good email from Lon Welsh the other day about this.
It is a good email.
You know, obviously everyone knows interest rates have dropped, which has driven up demand. But it's been the thing I've been really curious about. Mm-hmm. And he pointed out, because he also co-owns First Alliance Title Company, so they see a different angle of stuff. He said a lot of lenders are so busy with refinances that they're missing their close dates on purchases.
That's exactly right.
Now, we've had no issues with you on just our closes, because we come to refis, I never really know about it.
Right.
But closes we haven't. But is that really that common out there?
It is common. So the average industry time frame from the day you apply for your loan until the day you close is 49 days as an industry. All right, for a mortgage loan.
Wait, say that again.
So for a mortgage loan, the average time frame from the day you apply for your loan until the day you close is 49 days.
Does that mean the pre-approval process, or once I get my property under contract?
Once you're under contract.
Okay, so once I'm under contract, now once I talk to you and start giving you my tax return.
Exactly. Okay. So that's industry average, 49 days from the day I go under contract and apply for my loan to the day I close. And over the last 2 months, we've seen that as an industry extend to 55 days. We've seen 6 additional days, which is what, a 15% increase in time frame?
Just over two months. That's a big increase.
Because everyone is so busy with refinances. Now, let me tell you what's going on my team. We have not had that. All right. Our average from contract date to closing date is 21 days. That has not changed over the last 2 months. Now, certainly we're doing more refinances. Some of our past clients are on the podcast here, and you know we're reaching out, we're helping you lower your interest rates, et cetera. But one thing that's really important to us is we know how to run an efficient operation, that if we get in 10 new refinance transactions, it's not going to impact our purchase transactions. And not every lender can do that. So whoever you're working with, if you're selling a home, buying a home, make sure that your lender's aware of your time frame and that they can meet that deadline.
Yeah, I'm just surprised there's some, like, you know, running a business angle. Like, I mean, refinances, you know, they're important, but like, hey, if, you know, from my perspective, hey, I get refinanced and it closes on August 10th versus August 7th. Like, mm-hmm. It's really not going to matter for me. Now, there's always a small percentage of times where I need to refinance by a certain date to buy something else, but it's not a big deal. But hey, a prep and a contract, those dates have a lot more significance.
Absolutely. But I'll tell you, it is surprising, and this would be a whole another rabbit hole we could go down. You'd be amazed the inefficiency in the lending industry.
I probably would not, because I've really gotten to know that all around real estate and businesses in general.
Yeah. So totally different topic, but that is a real concern, especially if you're selling your home and buying another home. Make sure whoever's doing the financing for that buyer that's purchasing your property, make sure they understand your dates, deadlines, and when it's got to close. Otherwise, you're going to get to your closing date, they're not ready to close, and you're stuck holding the bag on the next property you want to buy.
That's good to know, because I've been following. I actually looked right before we sat down to record this, just the year-to-date total sold for this year compared to last year. I think it was like around 33,000, but don't quote me on that number. But I remember the percentage-wise. So far this year-to-date, it said we're down about just under -1% compared to last year.
Yeah.
Which to me, like 1%.
It's like a marginal error.
Other is just like, yeah, whatever. That's not significant enough. If there was a zero behind it, that would be, but a 1%-ish or less, like who cares? So are you expecting, are those under contracting so pushed up that we'll see that total sold eventually go up compared to last year?
Yeah. I think what you'll see is they'll drag out a little bit. So the 5,900 properties that got under contract in the month of July, and we only closed 5,400. I think next month you'll see kind of it swing back where, hey, we got 5,000 under contract, but we closed 5,200, okay. Right? So some of those will still, they're in the pipeline, they're in process, they're just delayed in closing. They're not, you know, they're not writing a 30-day contract, they're writing a 45, 60-day contract. It's just taking longer.
Okay. So going on down, the status snapshot. So sold price averages and median. So the sold price on the average was about $498,000. And the median was about 434. So they're up, both up in the 4% range compared from this July to last July. So is that the normal 8-9% we've been seeing last couple of years? No, it's not. But it's not a plateau and certainly not negative appreciation.
That's right.
So again, the best analogy I can come so far is we've had the pedal to the metal the last number of years in the market, just flooring it. And now the foot's coming off the gas. We are still accelerating, which means we're still appreciating, just not as fast.
Yep.
And the close price to list price. So this is saying, hey, the house is listed at, you know, say $100,000. How much does it close for? Which is indication if people are on average going above list price or getting it for below list price. Last July, we were at 100.07% close price to list price, meaning people were about 0.07% above list price on average. Now, this past July, we were at 99.32%, which is about 0.7 lower than what we saw last year. So, I mean, on purchase price, that can be a couple thousand dollars, but it's nothing really that significant. It's nothing indicating that the market's going to drop. It's nothing indicating that there's a bubble or anything like that. It just means prices are starting to get a little more soft on there. And I think it's a combination of we're going in the slower season now, plus a lot of sellers and listing agents have not adjusted to this transitioning market, going from crazy seller's market to a normal seller's market, and maybe eventually a balanced market. They've not adjusted their pricing strategies on there. So a lot of people are still overpricing their houses, and they're just getting clobbered because if you overprice your house, the market does not bring you a bunch of offers to bring it down. But if you price your house correctly, the market will bring a bunch of offers to bump it up, or multiple offers coming in at list price. So price it correctly and don't let that stat say, oh my gosh, there's a bunch of stuff that, you know, I can start lowballing on. It's not the case. As we've talked about in the past roundups, we're seeing the biggest differences in, number one, being able to catch our breath when looking at properties running contracts, but most importantly, in the seller concessions and inspection objection resolution items. I mean, the last three properties I closed, we've all seen, they've all been 10,000 plus in seller concessions, which we never had last year.
No.
I didn't have. Maybe one or two, but nothing like we are
nothing
this year.
Like we're getting right now. Yeah,
and you're seeing the same thing because you see a lot more transactions than I do, right?
I do, yeah. I'm seeing about 60% of transactions have seller concessions right now. And for those of you that don't know, that is the seller giving you a credit towards, hey, we're not going to fix the windows, we're not going to fix the broken door, but we're going to give you $5,000 instead. Well, you can use that money to pay your closing costs. You can use it to pay upfront mortgage insurance. You can use it to buy down your interest rate. A lot of different variables that you can do with that. Just closed a transaction last week where a gentleman got almost $10,000, like $8,800 in seller concessions, We used it to pay all of his closing costs and pay his upfront mortgage insurance, saved him more than $200 a month by not having to pay monthly mortgage insurance. So it was a great opportunity to take advantage, not take advantage, but, you know, utilize the market right now to save some money and get the seller to pay for some of your closing costs.
Yeah. And just to kind of clarify a few things is, you know, Joe was saying, hey, fix the windows or whatever, where, you know, last year they said, yeah, whatever, take it or leave it as is.
Right.
Where this year, like, yeah, I'll give you a credit. And from a financing perspective, which obviously has a big impact on cash flow, which is what a lot of us investors care about, $10,000 in seller concessions will have a much bigger impact on your monthly payment and therefore your monthly cash flow than $10,000 in a reduced price point.
That's right.
So about every $5,000 finance is about $25 a month. But if you're buying down interest rate, prepaying mortgage insurance, or paying $5,000 in closing costs, that's having a much bigger impact on that monthly cash flow right now. So keep that in mind out there. Obviously, if you work with me and Joe, we're talking about that. If you're with other people doing deals on your own, make sure you learn about that because that is where we're seeing the sweet spot in the market, though. Bottom line, we are still in a seller's market, but interest rates have dropped. So if you bought last year in the late fall, early winter, good time to refi and out there and go out there and buy a rental property or house hack because the numbers work. So give you a quick perspective on the inventory. As I said, we were about 9,500 inventory for this past July. The last time we had this much inventory was actually June of 2019. But if you skip June of 2019, we go all the way back to about July, August of 2013. So to put this in perspective, the record low of inventory for the month of July was 7,352 properties. In July 2017, the record high was just shy of 32,000 in July 2006. Now, very different extremes of the market then, you know, July 2006 versus 2017, but we're at 9,400 or so properties. Are we closer to the lowest 7,300 or the high of 32,000?
We're really close to the lowest inventory ever. Yes. So we're still in a very strong seller's market, not an absolutely bananas seller's market like we had a year ago, 2 years ago, but still very strong seller's market. Great time to sell. But keep in mind, we have this really interesting market right now. Great time to buy as well because interest rates are low. We covered last month. Properties are on sale once you factor in the appreciation from last year to this year and then factor in the difference in interest rates from last year to this year. So really interesting time in the market. Great time to sell, but also a great time to buy.
So we talked about prices. I wanted to throw in something about rent as well because we often talk about prices and those metrics. We're saying, hey, it's a good time to buy a rental property. So let's talk about what the rental market is doing. So every quarter, the Apartment Association of Metro Denver releases a quarterly Metro Denver vacancy and rent report. So this is for Q2 of 2019. And I'm just taking a very high-level stats because it is a thick report. And I usually just read the summary page. But here's what it is. And just so you guys know, this is going after the apartment buildings in Denver. So these are the bigger investors, the bigger property managers out there, which is usually not the people listening to, you know, it's not us. It's not me and Joe. We're mom and pop investors like most people on the podcast. But these are the bigger institutional players at this level because they can actually collect a lot more data and know what we're doing. So I know they collect over 100,000, had 100,000 plus people participate. So it's a really good sample size. So vacancy rate this quarter is at 5%. So that was second quarter 2019. First quarter 2019 was a 5.4 vacancy. So vacancy went down about 0.4 of a point. Now, if you look at vacancy in second quarter 2018, we were at 6% vacancy. And quarter two of 2017 was a 5.5 vacancy. So out of the last, you know, couple of years comparing similar quarters, a vacancy has actually dropped. So what does that mean? Well, that all those new apartment buildings coming into Denver downtown are being absorbed.
Yeah.
Is very, very much it. So there's not a glut in rentals yet. And so a 5% vacancy rate is low.
Yeah, it's very low.
And this takes in account all the brand new Class A stuff, you know, Class B stuff, Class C stuff, 1950s built all the way to brand new. So it's a really good high-level overview of the market. So the average rent, and this is for all, you know, studios, one, two, three bedrooms, average rent was $1,519 for Q2. First quarter was $1,480, so about a $40 increase. And that could also just be, hey, we're going from, you know, winter to second quarter, which is prime time for leasing places up. This quarter in 2018, we were at about $1,484, so about $35 less quarter over quarter comparing the years. And quarter two of 2017 was about $1,419 in rent. So what do we see here? Vacancy is staying, it's actually going down a little bit, but staying stable, which is in the very low end of the market. And then rents continue to creep up. So, Joe, would this news encourage you or discourage you from buying a rental property?
I'm very encouraged to buy a rental property.
And you're in the market for one, right?
I am in the market for one. Yeah. So if you're out there and you have a rental property, I want to buy it. Vacancies going down indicates that we have more people renting properties, fewer people moving out. Fewer people buying and becoming homeowners and more people becoming renters, whether that means they're moving in from out of state or moving out of their parents' basement or whatever it might be. There's a general increase of people that want to rent properties. That's good for me if I'm a landlord.
Mm-hmm. And so just to kind of sum things up here, Joe and I are both very bullish on the market from a long-term rental perspective. Like Joe said, he's in the market for one. I'm closing on one of my rental properties in like 8 days or 9 days from this recording.
Mm-hmm.
We're not just saying that. We're believing that. And we're buying places now ourselves. So showing trends, won't go into much details on here because really nothing major. Normal showings are dropping per properties as we go into the summer slowdown. So about 12 showings per listing right now. So nothing major there to talk about. And then this is a chart we're looking at that I know you guys can't see. And it's actually probably a good thing because there's a lot of stuff going on here. I have to stare at for about 30 minutes to understand it. But what it does actually breaks down the market based on square footage. So how big the property is. So homes, condos, townhomes type stuff. So the smallest 10%, then 11 to 25%, and then 25 to 50%, 50 to 75%. 75 to 90%, and the largest 10%. So we got six different categories of properties out there based on the square footage. Now, as many of you know, that entry-level affordable homes, which are the starter homes needed for many first-time home buyers, and also a lot of us investors want to get to the smaller, lower-priced stuff, we've just not had a lot of that stuff on the market. A lot of the new stuff has been bigger homes, new construction way outside of the city, or that new construction, on the 30th floor in downtown Denver. But what we're starting to see, comparing 2016 to 2019, is we're actually seeing some big increases on the smaller square footage of properties. So looking at homes from 2016 to 2019, we've had about a 56% increase in active properties and 140% increase in condos in that range. And then from the next two categories, 11% to 25% and 25 to 50%, we've had about a 30 to 40% increase in homes and about 120 to 130% increase in condos. Now, as you get to the bigger stuff, I'm just kind of going down the chart here. The larger homes, 75% all the way up to the largest 10%. We've actually seen very little growth in homes from negative 3% to 19%. And from condos, we've seen in the 75 to 90% percentile and 84% growth and nothing in the largest growth. So overall, the percent changes we're seeing, a lot more inventory in the smaller stuff versus the bigger stuff. So good news for first-time home buyers, but really good news for us since we're investors listening to this podcast. But this might have a really interesting effect on what we see the average prices in Denver go and price appreciation. Now, yep. Joe, you got a good metaphor or analogy for this. So I'll let you
absolutely
talk about it.
Yeah. So a lot of times this is called a product mix variance challenge.
And say that again.
A product mix variance challenge. That was the word they used to teach me when I was in speech therapy years ago. So the way to describe this is we're selling more homes at the lower price price range than we are at the higher price range. And that's going to impact your average price and show that it's decreasing. Now, that doesn't mean that properties are actually depreciating. It just means that the average sold price is less. Here's the way I describe it. Chris, let's say you run a car lot and you sell two types of cars. And I'm going to pick out numbers here just to make the math easy. Let's say you sell Hyundais for $50,000 and you sell Cadillacs for $100,000. All right. And last month you sold one Hyundai and one Cadillac, one for 50 Hyundai, one for 100 Cadillac. Your average sales price was $75,000. Would you agree with that?
Yep. That math makes sense.
This month you sell zero Cadillacs and two Hyundais at $50,000 each.
So I'm selling more of the inexpensive stuff.
Exactly. Your average sales price was $50,000. So if I look at average from last month to this month, your average sales price went down from $75,000 down to $50,000. But did the price of your Cadillacs decrease at all?
No.
Did the price of your Hyundais decrease at all?
No.
The only thing that changed was you sold more at the lower price than at the higher price. So it's a product mix variance challenge. So if you start to see stuff come out in the Denver Post, in the common media that says, oh my God, prices are going down, the sky is falling, not necessarily. We've got to really dive in. And I think we are going to see that. We are going to see more homes selling at the lower price range than we are at the higher price range. And that product mix change is going to show lower average sales price, but it's actually not a depreciating market.
Yeah. So basically, I mean, good, great metaphor there. So basically, you may see some plateauing appreciation at the high level market or even some negative appreciation at some point.
That's right.
And that's not because the market's tanking. That's not because we're in a bubble. As Joseph said, it's because it's the whatever that phrase you said.
The product mix variance challenge?
Yes. It's all the smaller stuff coming on the market. So smaller, cheaper stuff for sale is going to bring the average prices and the median prices lower. So if you get when those, we start seeing those numbers, we'll definitely dive on those more. Or if you guys have seen the price change map that your castle does, it breaks it down by neighborhood, you'll see a lot of the more expensive neighborhoods, the Hilltops and Cherry Creeks. They're not appreciating that much, but the more affordable stuff, Southwest Denver, North Aurora, those places, they're still seeing some really good, oftentimes double-digit appreciation.
Yep. And I think we're going to see more of that as we go into the latter half of this year and first part of next year. We're going to see more at the lower price ranges, more appreciation at the lower price ranges, less appreciation at the higher price ranges, which is good for everybody on this podcast because we're generally buying $400,000 and under properties for nomading, house hacking, and investment properties.
All right. So we are going to move into our deal analysis. And I know we kind of talked more data than more market data than we normally do, but there's some good stuff to talk about this month.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this first deal is one that we closed on about, I want to say about 2 months ago, give or take a couple of weeks. So is a fourplex in Westminster. So to give you guys the breakdown of this, let me pull up my notes on this property. So this is a fourplex in Westminster that was on the market for about listed at $750,000. And the product mix or unit mix was, it was either 2-1s or 2-2s. Listed on there. I think it was all 2-1s.
All 2-bedroom, but yeah, yeah. Two-bed, 1-bath.
Yeah, I think that's what it was because that's pretty typical up there. But, yep. This is a legitimate fourplex. It's zoned R4, which means it can be 4 units there. Huge lot though. And then, you could probably fit 20 cars into this parking lot and then plus maybe not that many, but like 10 or 15 cars in the parking lot. And then out at the very back of it, there's, 4 detached garages. So it's one building, but with 4, individual garage spaces on there. So just a big lot. And that's, one of the reasons we really liked it. So good, 1960s build. All brick fourplex. So just, those things are tanks, which help out with, maintenance and just they last a long time.
Ideal for rental property, something that's bulletproof.
Yeah.
A lot of hard surfaces, not like a lot
literally.
Of carpet, right? Yeah. I mean, it's true. You want stuff that really a tenant cannot just completely tear up, whether they've got dogs or kids or whatever, you want something that's really sturdy.
So the reason we like this, Number one, I mean, as you guys first talked about, there's not a whole lot of good Maltese in the market. This one, as far as like conditions of Maltese, was in pretty good shape. Interiors, a little, you know, they weren't updated. They weren't outdated, though, but they were pretty par for the course. But updated mechanicals, as far as water heaters and furnaces and things like that, were relatively new and in good shape. But it's also in Westminster, which I really like that part of town, because Westminster is doing a ton of redevelopment around their downtown area. And then there's also just other pockets of redevelopment or development going on in different parts of Westminster. They're doing a lot of initiatives at the city level to make it just to invest money in there and help make it a, you know, I don't want to call it a better place, but just improve the characteristics of it. So it's in Westminster. It's a few blocks away from one of the light rail stations that follow along that go up to Westminster. It's in that 36 corridor area. I mean, from a long-term perspective, how is that area between Denver and Boulder not going to win over the next 30 years?
Like, I mean, it's been winning the last 20, and I think it's going to continue.
It's going to keep winning. So all sorts of stuff for, you know, just why we like that location, like a long-term play. So essentially, very solid numbers now with lots of long-term upside. That's exactly what our investor was looking for. He wants something he could just come in, park some money in, do some updating, increase rents a little bit, and just hold on to it as a long-term buy and hold. So I'm going to pull up the spreadsheet here. All right, and so we actually got this property for $730,000, and I could literally spend a half an hour talking to you about just the details of what we got on this property, but here's like the two-minute version. We had this property back under contract back in like, I want to say like February or March. And the seller, listing agent was awesome. The seller was one of the worst sellers I've ever met. Like, could not find paperwork, just missed deadlines. So eventually the deal just killed itself because every single deadline kept missing. And we eventually had to like, all right, we just have to kill the deal. So, you know, we walked away from it. We were irritated. Our buyer was irritated. The listing agent was irritated. And the seller was, I don't know, doing whatever the seller was doing, which was not paying attention to his properties. So then we went out and got another property under contract. It was a triplex in Aurora near all the hospitals out there. Looked really good because it was renovated, had strong numbers, strong rents. But as we dug into it, it was only zoned for an R2 and not R3. So the triplex was grandfathered in, but if the building ever burned down or there was issues, it won't be able to be rebuilt as a duplex. So our buyer did not want that because he wants to do a long-term play that gives him potential even for development or other things down the road because he's got some background in development and commercial property. So he wants to keep that open for him. Totally understand. So we cancel that, and that's just one of those things. For some investors, those properties are perfectly fine. For others that want to maybe have a development play down the road, yeah, they don't want that. They want a something that's zoned appropriately. So then we found a duplex in Lakewood that actually had, the numbers weren't that great, but what the play was, it was like a 1910 or 1905 duplex, and it looked like a 1905 duplex. So the numbers were, it had been a negative cash flowing property slightly, but the play was in the future development of it because it was zoned R6. We went to the property under contract, did the inspection, you know, got all of our due diligence, needed a lot of work. But all around it, there are a lot of like 6-unit, 8-unit, 10-unit type properties. And that was a potential for what our buyer wanted to do down the road, do a development play. And we're like, cool, hold on the duplex for a couple of years. It's good enough to kind of keep the numbers in there and make the property pay for itself while you start the development process. Well, then that, I think it was Proposition 200 or whatever it's called, that Lakewood initiative where they are limiting development and supply on properties, that was getting a lot of traction. So that really scared us, because if this passes, that may limit you not being able to do that 6-unit down the road. And then his numbers for developing were going out longer than he thought it. So he was initially expecting. So we canceled all that. And right as we're canceling all that, this fourplex not came back on the market, but we had been in touch with the listing agent the whole time because relationships matter in real estate. So we'd been talking and just staying in touch with him. And then finally, the stars were kind of aligning and we could do a quick close limited contract because we knew everything on the property. So we got that back under contract and then went through it. So that was like a 4 or 5 month process. Not one of the fun ones.
I've seen soap operas that were less complicated than that.
And I went over my 2 minutes there.
Wow.
But like our buyer was awesome because he was stayed on phase through it. And he said, yeah, you know, he understood the way the market works and was willing to, you know, get punched in the face once or twice to find a good long-term property. This one, stars aligned. We jumped on it. We liked it. So I'm getting it for about $730,000 purchase price. And so I was like 20 grand below the list price. And part of the reason is because it needed a new roof. Which I think was like $10,000 or $12,000. It wasn't terribly expensive, but it needed a new roof just from an insurance standpoint, and just was an old roof that had some beat up, it was beat up. So he put up a little bit over 25% down, probably about $15,000, $16,000 in initial repair cost. He wanted to take this property directly into an LLC. So he went through a commercial loan through First Bank and got an adjustable rate mortgage. If you guys want to hear about the pros and cons and how you can take properties and LLCs, go listen to whatever podcast we did a few months ago or a couple weeks ago on should I put my property in LLC. Go to denverinvestmentrealestate.com/LLC and I'll take you there. But he got about a 4% interest rate on like a 5-1 or 7-1 ARM. So, you know, really low interest rate. And the rents on the properties, $1,300 for one unit, $1,100 for another unit, which is below market, which will bring up to he'll bring up to market once it turns. Another one is at like $1,305, and the last one, it was rented. Then in between all the soap opera, it actually the tenant moved out. So it's not been, last time I talked to the buyer, it's not been rented yet, but they're in the process of getting it rented out because he went in and did some updates to the unit, and they're hoping for like a $1,350 to $1,400 in rent there. So some upside in rents right there. It's all together just over about $5,000 in total rental income. We stuck in a 3% vacancy, 4% appreciation, a 30% effective tax rate. Oh, by the way, you're hearing me say tax rate. This is a new spreadsheet that Joe's been working on. If you guys heard us talk about the return on investment quadrant, this includes that, and you'll hear a lot more about. So come to those classes, come to spreadsheet classes, but we're using version 6 of the spreadsheet right now, which should be released right around the same time this podcast goes live.
If I do say so myself, it's pretty cool.
It's very cool. So you'll hear me say some different numbers on here. So property management, yes, 8%. Monthly reserves, 8% for repairs, maintenance, CapEx. Taxes, about $3,200. Insurance, about $1,500. Water, sewer, about $1,500. Trash, under $800. Electric, about $3,000. So with all these current numbers and taking into account the new roof and some initial repair cost, it comes out to be about a mid-5 cap rate. But if you look at the return on investment quadrant, which talks about cash flow, appreciation, debt pay down, and depreciation, it's a 23.6% on his initial capital he invested that year. So that's initial return on year one on the initial capital return. Now, if you don't follow that, well, stay tuned to our future webinars and classes because that is, we'll go into a good couple hours when I do that. But understand, there's more to properties than cash on cash return, which is about a 4% cash on cash return for this property. But realistically, he's making probably a 24%-ish return on his money. And overall, that's about a $54,000 return in year one. So about $9,000 in cash flow, about $7,000 depreciation, $9,000 debt pay down, and close to $30,000 in appreciation. So, wow, where else can you get a 23% return, Joe, besides real estate?
My friend Bernie Madoff has a fund you can invest in.
You had to time that one correctly.
Right. You know, I want to give a shout out to James Orr, who taught us about this. You know, traditionally, we've always just looked at cash flow and cap rate. And, you know, James really pointed out, hey, guys, there's so many other things. Because a lot of times we would say, hey, when we're analyzing a property, cap rate is good. Cash and cash return is good. Plus, you get all the other benefits of owning real estate, which was kind of this sort of catch-all. Now, this new spreadsheet measures all the other benefits of owning real estate. It measures the appreciation, measures your debt reduction, measures your depreciation, your tax benefits. So I think you guys are really going to like this new spreadsheet. If you have not seen it yet, you can download it. There's a website. I think it will be posted after we promote this. After we publish the new spreadsheet, but it's definitely one you want to go download because it's very user friendly, just like our old spreadsheet, but now it's going to give you a lot more data and updates on the property.
Yeah, and go to denverinvestmentrealestate.com and click on the spreadsheet, the rental spreadsheet button. It'll take you there once it's updated, and make sure you're on our email list because we'll definitely send out a few email blasts once it's live. But here's an interesting thing I always like to point out now using this return on investment quadrant. Is the debt pay down is about a 4% return for the year, and depreciation is a 2.9% return for the year. That's a 6.9% almost guaranteed return on your money. I call it guaranteed.
It is, yeah. Unless you're going to stop making your payments, it's pretty much guaranteed.
Which is, if you can make those numbers work, let me know. But you're going to pay your mortgage, or you should, and I don't see the tax benefits from depreciation changing anytime in the future, especially with a real estate person in the Oval Office. Yeah. So a 6.9% guaranteed return, plus you have cash flow and appreciation as a big fat cherry on top. So a great, great long-term investment here. And if we come in here and update these rents to some pro forma stuff and add a little extra in for some garages, which... either rents them out separately or includes them in rents. So I'm bumping up rents a couple hundred dollars here to like that one that was under rented, $1,100 to $1,300, and $200 more for garages. Well, now that takes it to a 5.8% cap rate, and your initial return on investment is going to be about 25 to 26% on that year one return. So just a great long-term play. And one thing I forgot about the location on here, or I think I forgot to mention, is that we've heard us talk a few times on this podcast about opportunity zones. Now, you know, we are not investing directly in opportunity zones because that's really for bigger money and a lot of times much savvier investors. And you gotta have some serious money to usually make those numbers work for all the stuff in there. But if you know money is going in these opportunity zones, well, you can ride those waves with them. That's one of the things we like to do. So this property is not in an opportunity zone, but it's literally on the other side of the street of the border and then like four plexes down the street. So, I mean, it's I could throw a rock from this property to the opportunity zone. So if a bunch of money goes in those opportunity zones, which it probably will, do you think that's going to benefit this property more, Joe, from rents and appreciation?
Absolutely, because while this is not in the opportunity zone, everything right next door to it is, and you're going to see more investment there, which is going to drive up prices right across the street, which is going to drive up prices right here. So I think it's a great quote-unquote opportunity on this property.
Good play on words.
I like that.
So this is really fun because, you know, we don't do a whole lot of multis, but as the market is shifting a little bit, we're seeing some better opportunities for multis. We're also just seeing more deal flow for off-market opportunities on multis as well. So if you want to buy a rental property, definitely reach out to me because we can talk a lot more details about this. And we'll go into some future podcasts with a lot more detail about the state of the market with multis as well. It's on my to-do list.
Absolutely.
All right. Anything else we can talk about on this property, Joe?
No, I think this is a great one. Let's talk about the next one.
All right. So the next one... is something else that we have not actually ever talked about on this podcast. This is a rental property in the Highlands with a future development play. So the investor here, he wanted a solid long-term rental, and he wanted to stack the deck for upside on appreciation, upside on rents, and also have some upside either for developing the property or reselling it down the road to an owner-occupant for just a big cash out. So getting cash from this property today is not his number one goal. It's to diversify his portfolio and it's for long-term wealth building. So this is in the Highlands, and it is two blocks from like the Root Down restaurant, which is 33rd and Pecos or so. So right there, as you guys know, that's like, that's a cool part of town.
Pretty hot area.
Yeah, really cool area. And just, hot rental market, hot sales market, just hot, 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 hot. And just great long-term prospects on there. So one of a solid rental with future potential. So this property came to the market, and this is something had them. It took about 2 months to close. It wasn't because lenders were backed up with refining issues. It was because we just had some curveballs on this property. We got under contract over list because it was priced well. They did a good job marketing it, and it's in a great location, and it just came to the market. We got under contract, though, did our inspection, And we had a few major things that jumped out to us. One, the roof was just in horrible shape. So the inspector, you know, said, hey, you guys got to get a roof router, check out this. And plus, we saw up there a planter box, just one, you know, 2-foot by 6-foot planter box. Couldn't imagine what they were growing up there.
On the roof?
Yeah, on the roof.
Okay.
What would you be growing up there on the roof, Joe?
Potatoes.
Yeah, potatoes, huh? I think somewhere in the past, someone's grown something different.
Maybe oregano? I don't know.
So anyway, you saw the planter box up there. Nothing exciting in there that we saw. But there's a planter box up there, which, you know, aside from it being whatever they're growing up there, having 3 feet of soil on top of the roof with poor drainage, that's not a good thing to have on the roof, aside from the roof was a flat roof with old issues. And then going on the back of the property, this is just those standard lots you see in the Highlands around Denver, just those standard rectangular lots. If you leave the back of the house and walk towards the back of the property, towards the detached garage, the neighbor to the right, the fence, you know, normally it's just a straight shot. Well, the fence was a straight shot and then took a 90-degree turn 2 feet into our property, then about 8 or 10 feet straight, then 2 feet or 90-degree turn back right, 2 feet, then straight back down the property line. So there is this 2-foot by 8-foot carve-out from the neighbor's fence that was sitting there. Well, since there's a high likelihood that this will be a future development play, you know, into building a, you know, a bigger house or popping the top or something like that, which is what's happening in that neighborhood, we wanted to make sure that we were not going to have any issues in the future with not being able to take all the square footage because, you know, Denver, like every municipality, they require offsets from the fence. So if we've got this offset that's, you know, the fence comes in 2 feet, that has a effect on all the other offsets for building back there, whether it's the garage or the property itself. And so we wanted to make sure that I got taken care of. So the roof, you know, what we're able to do is actually negotiate the seller to cover the roof cost, which again, a year or two ago,
they wouldn't have done. They would have just said, no, it's got a roof. You're lucky. Congratulations.
Take it or leave it.
Yeah.
So we had one of our guys come out, like our go-to roofer, come out and quote it. And what we like about this roofer is he gives you like the real deal bid. There's no surprise and there's no, oh, we got to come back and do this other $3,000 thing or this. Like the bid you get is the price it costs. He's just on it and really good. So we like to use that regardless of if we're selling or buying because it's the true numbers. But his bid came in at like $26,000-$27,000. It was expensive because there's a lot of other stuff they had to do, which is beyond my understanding of roofs. A lot of work needed to be done. And the seller said, oh, let me bring in, you know, our roofer because he had a roofer that does flat tops. I think that quote came in around $19,000 or $20,000. And then I had one of those, you know, websites or companies that come out and give you like just three people come out and give you bids. And those are all like $14,000 or $15,000, which were just junk bids.
Right. Just turn it into your insurance. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it was not an insurance claim. It was just an old roof that needed updating. And so since we were able to negotiate the seller to take care of the roof, kind of had this interesting timeline because the seller didn't want to start replacing the roof because they were paying for it until we got past this fence issue, which required us getting an ILC, which required us to have an attorney draft up some documents for the neighbor to sign to, you know, say that, hey, they were not going to lay claim to that. Mm-hmm. And of course, that does not happen in overnight.
That's not a fast process.
Or even a week process. So this just delayed it. And I totally understand from the sellers because like they don't want to put out the money to replace the roof until we get past, you know, our objection deadlines for points out in the contract, you know, our exit strategies for the contract. So we had to work through all that. Then the roof process got started. So it just took a while to close and just, hey, that's the way it goes sometimes. So got all the fence stuff figured out. End of the day, we're all good. Just I think we all had some brain damage from that.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know why it's so hard to collect signatures, but whatever. That's the way it is when you got lawyers involved. But we're good to go on there, which is incredibly important for the property. And then they started on the roof, and they went with the seller's go-to roof guy, which was like a $19,000, $20,000 quote. Then guess what happened? There were two price increases that brought up to right around like $26,000, $27,000, which is exactly what our roofer said. But we wrote the inspection resolution in a way where it all fell on the seller.
Yep.
So we were CYAing ourselves, or most important, I should say we were CYAing the buyer. That way, if things went above the quote, did not fall on our buyer, it was the seller's responsibility. So the extra $5,000 or $7,000 in order changes. Hey, Mr. Seller, sorry, but
it's your roof.
Yeah, it's your roof, and we need to fix before we can close on it.
Yep.
And of course, you know, that took longer than we thought, then inspections, all that stuff. So that bumped out closing a couple weeks. So end of the day, though, we got it closed. And we'll go through the numbers here because this is there's a lot of cool stuff or a lot of potential for this property. So let me pull this up. And I should say one of the nice things actually worked to our buyer's advantage while we were going through ILCs and legal documents and the roof replacement was it gave us plenty of time to figure out what we want to do with the property from a rental standpoint, because it could use some updating depending on what type of landlord you want to be. You could rent it out as is, but you're not going to maximize rents. And he wanted to maximize rents. So we brought one of our property managers, Anne-Marie Sundy of Legacy Property Management. She knows this type of product really well. And we wanted to bring an expert to just double check our numbers and let us know, hey, for these higher end rentals, what exactly do we need to do to maximize rent while minimizing our cash out for updates? So how can we maximize our return on investment to get the maximized rent? Because great, if we can spend $20,000, increase rents $800 a month, we'll do it. But we don't want to spend $50,000 to increase it, you know, an extra $100 a month because the return's not there. So where's that sweet spot? So we had her come in. We did a quick FaceTime with her on the property. And then a week later, she came in and walked the property as well. And gave us some great, or gave the buyer some great updates, you know, some minor updates to the kitchen, refinished the flooring, and basically redid the bathroom. And then the little deck out back needed to be rebuilt because that was like a safety hazard.
Death trap.
Yeah, it was like, oh, you know, make sure you avoid two steps on there because you may fall through.
Yeah.
So all that, estimating about $15,000 to $20,000 in extra repair cost. And a great thing about Anne-Marie is she helped quarterback, or she's actually actively quarterbacking it right now because we just closed on this like 10 days ago at the time of this recording, quarterbacking with her contractors to get the property rehab. So the nice thing about that is if you're an investor without the great connections when it comes to rehabbing stuff, you know, you trying to find various subs or GCs to come and do work, you're going to be waiting a while and sorting through people.
Yeah.
But if you're a property manager, contractors take care of property managers because they give them a ton of business. So, you know, that's another, you know, just pros and cons. And so since our buyer is working with a property manager, able to lean on her and her network, and therefore she can snap her fingers, so to speak, and help get the contractors out there on the ball working it. So going through the numbers, we were about $480,000 purchase price. You know, about, I don't know, $8,000 to $10,000 total acquisition and loan cost, about $15,000 we're estimating in repair cost. And this is going to be, I have not gotten the exact interest rate, but it's going to be a low 4% interest rate, like 4.25%, because he's doing a ARM loan. So about 4.25% interest rate. And Anne-Marie thinks she can push rents at $34.95 a month. And this is a 3-bedroom, 1-bath, with unfinished basement, but said killer location, which is what matters and why people want to pay their rent out there.
Mm-hmm.
So she can push that. If not, it's going to be in the low $3,000. So we'll run these numbers, you know, pushing it and then realistic. But another reason I like Anne-Marie is she's pushing the numbers, which great, let's do it and see. So we're putting in appreciation at 5%, tax rate at 30%, property management, yes, 10% management rate, 8% reserves. It might be lower since they're doing a, you know, a good facelift right now, but it's an old property. Things break.
You might have some
down.
Plumbing, electrical issues down the road. Mechanical could come up.
So we just like to say, hey, in the long run, just assume 8% and we know where the numbers are.
That's right.
Taxes about $2,600. Property insurance about $1,800. And then assuming the now investor owner is going to pay water and sewer, you know, $1,300 a year because there's really no grass on the property. So assuming those numbers at those prices and assuming that $15,000 initial repair cost, because that's money he's writing in year one to get this maximized rent, we're going to take that in the calculations here. So, Joe, mm-hmm. what would you expect seeing someone buying a rental property in the Highlands? What would you expect for cash flow?
Not a ton. I mean, generally their properties have appreciated and out-appreciated rent growth. So I wouldn't expect a ton, maybe a GRM of 170, maybe. I think this is a little bit better than that, but just off the top of my head, I'd say 170 or so would be a property that you should be interested in there.
I have no idea what the GRM is on this property because I don't use GRMs.
Pretty good though, 142.
Yeah, so 142. So with GRMs, the lower the GRM, the better.
Yep.
As a basic rule of thumb, just the lower the better. So as a cash on cash return, about a 3.9%, comes in at a 5.5 cap rate.
Chilling it.
Yeah, but for a single family home in the Highlands, I was expecting a four-ish cap rate when we started looking.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why, you know, we looked at properties and we brought in an expert who knows the area as a property manager because we wanted someone that could double check our numbers on rents and say, hey, great, what can you rent this for? Because she rents properties there on a regular basis. And it really varies by, you know, streets and property type. But overall, this should cash flow about $4,700 a year before cash flow. But going down to the return on investment quadrant, taking in the total return on investment, it's a 32.6% return on investment. So that's down payment, closing costs, plus the $15,000-ish he's putting into rehabbing the property. So a 33% return on your money. Kind of sucks.
That's terrible. That is a very, very good return. And this comes back to, you know, cap rate, cash on cash are not everything. This new spreadsheet is going to help you analyze so many other things. And what you get here, really great appreciation, really great debt pay down, really great depreciation because you're buying a larger property. So really, really good benefits on this one.
Yeah. So overall, that should be about a $40,000 dollar return. So about, you know, $24,000 appreciation, $6,500 in debt pay down. So about $30,000 of that is going to be in equity, which is like your real estate piggy bank, which, you know, you don't make that money this year, but when it comes time to sell or refi or 1031, you can, you know, tap into your real estate piggy bank. But cash flow and depreciation, about $9,000 in total. So, you know, great. That's really good. Now, we are using the numbers as far as, you know, $3,495 in rent. So if we drop that to $3,200 in rent, so, hey, great, we can't get that. We'll drop it $300 a month. Well, now the cash flow is still a positive cash flowing property and $1,900 a year in cash flow. And going back to the returns, you'll get about a 30% return on the first year and about $37,000 in dollar benefits in the year. So even though rents might be lower, it does not actually have a huge impact on your return. I think we're at 32 or 33%. Now it dropped to 30%.
Yeah, rents make up a small portion of the profit on this deal. A lot of the profits are the appreciation potential on this one.
Now, I think, you know, let's just say, you know, worst case scenario, or hopefully worst case scenario, $3,000 a month in rent. Well, now your annual cash flow is $4 a year, so you're break even. But your total return is about a 29% return, and you're still making about a $35,000 a dollar return as well. So still a very good return. So even if we're not hitting the higher rent marks that we want to hit with pushing the market and doing the rehab, great. Even if it doesn't get that great cash flow, it's still a 28, 29, 30% return on your money with lots of upside because you're in the Highlands. And I mean, right next door, as we were getting this place under contract, the next door neighbor is popping their top. I mean, it's, you know, dumpster out front, construction zone, doing that. So in 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, depending on what our investor wants to do and the market's doing as well, he may develop it or he may sell it off to someone else that wants to come in there and do an owner occ and then take the money and hopefully a huge appreciation and equity gain, take that and 1031 it into something else and play that game of trading up. And that, again, I won't go into all the details on here, but as we sit down and meet with clients, we say, hey, what are your goals? Because his number one goal is not cash flow. His number one goal is wealth creation and wealth preservation. And so he also wants to diversify against the stock market. So since the Dow has just dropped, or not the Dow, but the S&P has gone on a downhill roller coaster the last few weeks, cool. Taking a 30% return and taking out a chunk of money from the stock market right now, I'd say he's probably happy.
Deal. Yeah, pretty solid.
So overall, great property, a little different than we talk about a lot of times, so fun stuff. So we will got one more property to discuss because I know we're over an hour mark now or just getting over there. And this is actually not a deal that we actually purchased, but this is just an active rental deal out there. And let me not forget to mention that this property we just talked about in the Highlands and the Floorplex in Westminster we talked about, we both found them on the MLS. So they were MLS properties with good numbers and great long-term potential.
It's my favorite place to find properties, the MLS. It's not that complicated. A lot of people want to talk about door knocking, sending out direct mail, working with wholesalers. Those are all great. Don't forget the basics. Just go on the MLS, recolorado.com, and find properties. The next one we're going to show you guys is an actively listed property on the MLS. People tell us all the time there's no deals in the MLS. I think we're going to prove you wrong here. So yeah, let's take a look at this one.
Properties we buy pretty much on a monthly basis.
Yep.
So this is a 3-2 condo in Southwest Denver or South Aurora area.
Southeast Denver.
Southeast. Southeast Denver. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I need more coffee this morning. So if you guys want the exact details and property address, email me, email Joe. You can get it that way. But this is a condo. And what do condos require, Joe?
HOA fees.
And what type of down payment?
Oh, 25% for investors. And this one, I've actually been in this unit. Great unit. Listed at $195,000. Needs zero renovation, needs $0. Once you factor in your loan costs, acquisition costs, et cetera, 25% down, you'd be into this for about $53,000. Now, a really nice thing right now, condo 30-year fixed interest rates are very low, probably right around 4.5% as of today, but I put in 4.75.
They've dropped to 4.5?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, for condos. Yep. And this is a purchase price of $195,000. This thing rents for $1,850. And I have two investors that have bought in this complex, and Section 8 rents I have verified in this complex, $1,850 a month. So right off the top, that's like a 110 GRM. So before I look at anything else, this property makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
But we got to do our entire analysis. We're going to factor in vacancy, appreciation. Yes, we're going to factor in 10% for property management. We're going to factor in maintenance. We're going to factor in 5% for maintenance and reserves. There is an HOA. Now, this is really important. If just because there's an HOA, you want to make sure that it's in good shape. And the HOA here is $296 a month. Now, just the dollar amount doesn't necessarily tell you whether or not it's in good shape or bad shape, but it can give you an indication. If I've got an HOA of $500 a month and I go there and there's no pool, it's not a gated community, there's no guard shack, that might indicate there's some issues with the HOA and they're trying to catch up for some prior issues. In this case, $300, very reasonable for a 3-bedroom condo in Southeast Denver. So again, quick glance, very reasonable HOA dues. Obviously review the documents, review the budget, everything. Really reasonable HOA. Taxes, insurance, really cheap because it's a condo. What type of results do we get on this one, Chris?
So just to read those numbers, $800 a year in taxes, about $150 in annual property insurance. Again, no water, sewer, and lower maintenance because we're paying the HOA.
That's right.
So returns on here, annual cash flow about $4,500 a year, which is exactly what we see with all these investment condos we see right in that ballpark. 8.6% cash on cash return, 7% cap rate, and a 105 GRM. Now, the return on investment quadrant, 33% return on initial investment. 18.4% from appreciation, 8.6% from cash flow, 2.1% from depreciation, and 4.3% from debt paydown, and about an $18,000 or almost $18,000 dollar return on your initial investment.
Yeah.
So I like it.
And this was on the MLS, is on the MLS.
I think it's still active.
Yeah, it is. When I looked yesterday, it was active. So, you know, this is just a great lesson. These properties are out there. You know, it does require that you scour the MLS. But you know where I found this? You know who found this property? My wife. She was literally going through.
Well, she's been like ninja trained in how to use MLS.
She is ninja trained in how to use the MLS. But she was going through it, sent it over to me one day. She's like, hey, look at this property. Is this a good one? I was like, fantastic. This is what we're putting on our next monthly roundup. So just be aware, guys. They're out there. It doesn't take, you know, anything fancy. It doesn't take a fancy direct mail campaign or anything like that. Properties are out there in the Denver market. Just have to look for them, understand how to analyze them, and then go out and look at them and be comfortable and be ready to write an offer.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for listening. I know we're just a couple months past our mark, is what we like to keep these monthly roundup podcasts to. So a couple quick reminders. Make sure you register for the next Denver Investor Success Summit on October 12th. Go to denverISS.com. If you register before August 31st, you get the 2-for-1 deal. Joe and I will be there. Come say hi. Come hang out. We'll be hanging out around the tables there and at the networking event afterwards for happy hour. And then if you need help financing properties, whether owner-occupant or rental properties, definitely give Joe a call. And also, if you bought a property late last year, give Joe a call for refinancing as well, because yeah, I've had a couple clients do it, and the rates have dropped 0.75% of
a
point.
Yeah, if you've bought a property anytime in the last 3 years, regardless of how much money you put down, whether you put down 5, 10, 25%, give me a call. You'd be amazed how many opportunities there are to A, eliminate mortgage insurance, B, take cash depending on the equity you have, or C, just lower your interest rate, lower your monthly payment, especially if you bought a property for house hacking or you know, property you're going to rent in the future. Some really good opportunities to save money out there.
So, of course, you got Joe's contact details is all over the website. You can find them by Googling him or in the show notes. And if you need help finding a rental property, whether it's a traditional, you know, hey, putting 25% down on a multi or buying a cash flowing condo, or you want to do a house hack or nomad, reach out to me. That's what we specialize in. That's what I love doing. And, you know, we incorporate more of that long-term planning. It's not just about finding that killer deal right now. It's, hey, great, what deals can you buy, and what's the roadmap or what's the blueprint we need to put into place so you can reach your goal of, a lot of times it's, you know, $10,000, $15,000 for an early retirement cash flow goal in 10 to 15 years. So that's something that we specialize in, sit down with our clients and talk about, is not just a property, but doing that blueprint to help you reach your goals. So again, you can find me at denverinvestmentrealestate.com. All right, Joe, thank you.
Chris, thank you. Always appreciate being on the show, man.
I love it. And everyone out there for listening, thank you. If you got feedback, questions, or anything, reach out to us. Have a great day.